G'day everyone and welcome to the Talking Dice podcast. Whether you're a dice maker, collector or just a tabletop RPG lover, we've got you covered. I'm Aaron, the host of the show and author of the Critmaker Guide to Dicecraft, now available on Amazon. Running a podcast in 2024 is expensive, with hardware, hosting, production and advertising. It costs us a large sum of money each month. If you like this podcast, please consider a one-time donation via Ko-fi, or if you love it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For details, please check out our website, talkingdice.co. And on today's episode, we're talking with Nichelle, the Reliable Rogue. With a background in fine art, music, photography and journalism, Nichelle has been setting the scene on fire since 2019 with unique designs and colours. Welcome to the show, Nichelle. I'm a huge fan of your work.
Oh, thank you.
It says in your profile that you've been into tabletop role-playing for over 13 years. What sort of campaign are you playing now?
Yeah, we just actually started a new one. I have two groups. I have one that plays on Thursday, which is about a 3-4 hour session, which is good. And then I have one that plays on Sunday, which is a longer, like 6 hour, 12 to 6 p.m. So, but yeah, no, I'm having a lot of fun. I really like my new character and I'm playing a bard this time.
Ooh, a bard. Tell me about the bard.
The bard has a very short attention span and wants to be doing something. And if she's not doing something, she starts to get antsy. So the longer time goes on, the more antic
Brett,
she
this sounds
gets
like me.
Up to. It's been a fun character. We've only had a few sessions so far. We've always had something to do and we just had a bunch of downtime. So during that downtime, well, there's nothing to do. So the antics get ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. And we're probably on the verge of being kicked out of town soon, which is, I'm sure, has nothing to do with me.
You know, I'm pretty sure you're not a party until you've been kicked out of town for something.
Yeah. Antagonizing people.
It's not killing someone they shouldn't have. Then it's, you know, annoying an innkeeper or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my Thursday character, too. Just can't keep her mouth shut.
Right. And what's the other character?
The other character is a 13-year-old rogue who just wants everybody to be her friend to a point that she will sit there and just, like, talk to a guard for hours during their shift when they can't, you know, a captive audience. They can't leave, so... they're quite similar this time, I think, both of my characters I'm playing, so.
And channeling the inner child, that's such a cool roleplay idea.
Yeah, no, I love that. So that character I've actually been playing for probably 8 years off and on. We do a lot of breaks during our big campaign that our forever DM runs. So she's very near and dear to my heart. She started it as a 9-year-old rogue, I think. So it's been a few years as we've progressed.
Oh, wow. So she's aged as you've gone along. That's, again, such a cool role play.
Oh, yeah. She's having her preteen mood swings, too, which is I don't want to say it's fun to relive. It's fun on this side to relive. Maybe not so much like when it was actually happening.
Well, I was wondering how the rest of the party feels about that.
The worst part is I think most of them, they would never admit it, and they're probably going to listen to this, but I think most of them think she's the leader, or at least lets her lead. I'm not sure why they let this happen, because like I said, and then they egg her on. Like, we all play off of each other, which is why we always get kicked out of towns. Like, I think every town we've been to in my Thursday campaign, we get booted out instantly.
And do you play in person or do you play online? Or
we used to play in person. My Thursday group did. The Sunday group is in California and I'm in Washington, so it's a bit of a distance. But we used to play online in person, and then we switched to online after the pandemic, and you know, people had to move away. So, but we still have that core group, which is really, really nice. They used to all be my husband's coworkers. And now we kind of live in different spots, but we still all get together every Thursday and game, which is really fun.
So the Thursday one's been running for how long?
About 8 years, I would say.
Wow. Okay.
We've been, yeah.
And is that the same campaign or?
We play it off and on. So we have our forever DM. We try to give him a break every now and then, because like I said, it's been a long time. So someone else will DM. We've done, you know, Call of Cthulhu, Shadowrun. I played Dragon Age when they released, like long, long ago, when they released a Dragon Age tabletop game. We played a little bit of that.
I saw that, yeah.
We dabbled in a little bit of stuff, but, you know, our forever DM always picks it back up. And
okay, so you've crossed genres there. That's quite interesting.
Oh, yeah. We've done a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a DM years ago where we were playing Dungeons and Dragons for quite a long time, and we just started all getting bored with it, I think. And this is when I was much younger, and we were playing Warhammer 40K and, you know, other tabletop games like that. And one day he's just decided that our party would jump through this portal, and we jumped through the portal and ended up in the Shadowrun world.
Okay, sure.
You know, which is like cyberpunk. And so
that's great. I love Shadowrun so much.
And so literally what he did there was, you know, threw away the D&D book and you know, gave us all the Shadowrun rule sets. And so we kept running the same characters as if, you know.
Sure. That's great.
It was quite an interesting little turn of events there. And
that's awesome when you can like flow seamlessly into another setting. Heck, even into like another rule set is pretty awesome.
Oh, absolutely. So across genres, what's your favorite class to play?
Well, I mean, listen, it's in the name, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I like playing a rogue. Those are my favorite. Hands down. I am a clumsy oaf in real life. So like in D&D, I get to be anybody I want, and I choose to be someone who doesn't knock over 10 things off the desk whenever she moves her arms, you know.
High acrobatic score and stuff.
Yes, yes. My real life dex score is probably in the single digits. So right. I just want to be graceful for once.
Now, you mentioned there the rogue being part of your business name. And what about the reliable bit?
There's a long story to the business name, actually. There's a short and a long version.
Give us the long one.
The long one. So I actually started as an embroidery business. I started like sewing geeky bags. I would do like dice bags and messenger bags and backpacks. And I was Epic Embroideries. And I did that for about 5 years. And then when I got into dice making, I thought I'd really like to sell my dice, not because I wanted to sell them, but because I was practicing a bunch of things. Now I have all these dice and like, what am I going to do with them? And the hobby is expensive. So I was like, I want to sell them, but I felt really like boxed in with the name that I had chosen with my Epic Embroideries. So I thought it's time for a redo.
Epic dice making.
Yeah. So I thought this time I didn't want to be shoehorned into anything. So I thought, okay, I want it to be, you know, kind of nerdy tabletop focused. I didn't want it to just be about dice or about sewing or anything else. So I thought, well, I'm playing my rogue. I love my rogue. And then I thought, well, rogues don't really have, stereotypically, rogues maybe don't have the greatest reputation around. As like, you know, con men and thieves and stuff. And I thought, well, you know, I consider myself to be quite a reliable person. And if I were making a character in a game, what would I want their shop to be called that my players would trust them, that my NPCs would trust them, that they could build a reputable business? So that's kind of where the Reliable Rogue came from.
And I mean, looking at your Etsy scores, it's, you know, there's a lot of 5 stars there. So I guess people do feel that you're quite reliable.
I've actually had people saying that, oh yeah, she lives up to her name, the Reliable Rogue. And it's like, well, that's very nice. I always get a kick out of those ones because I consider myself reliable, but like, you know, maybe that's just from my own perspective.
And are you still doing any of the embroidery as well on the site?
I am not. I do the sewing on the side. All of my dice sets come with a little like matching zipper bag.
Oh, wow.
That they get stored in.
Yep.
Well, I shouldn't say matching, complimentary, where I use all of the scraps from my previous sewing business because I don't know if you know how much waste sewing like big bulky things can make. I have so much scrap fabric. So I make these little tiny, I'd say they're like 4x5 inch zipper bags. And I use my scrap fabric and I match it to the dice sets as best I can. So it kind of helps me reduce waste. And I know everybody really likes them. And so whenever I think, maybe I should just get rid of these because they take so long to make, And then everybody's like, I just love that your dice come with these bags. I'm like, well, I guess I can never get rid of them. So there's still a bit of sewing.
Yeah, right. And if the customers love it, they have to stay, right?
Yeah, yeah. Every time I think, because it's just added work and I don't mind it. They take like maybe 5-10 minutes to throw together. But when you're doing 10, 12 sets of dice and then 10, 12 things, like that can really add up. But everybody loves them so much. And honestly, I have so much fabric left over, both scrap and non-scrap fabric, and I keep buying it. I don't even sew stuff anymore, and somehow I still wind up at the fabric store.
Literally me in art supply stores all day, every day. Now, Nichelle, tell me a bit about how you got into dice making in the first place.
Well, I've been playing tabletop games for years. It's got to be close to 12, 13 years now. And, you know, back before, maybe before probably 2018, the dice selection was like limited, right? You were forced to pick from whatever your local game shop had on hand. And I'm big into, like, I don't want to say visuals, but like the aesthetics of things. I like to have my character art. I like to have my dice that match. I want you to show me pictures of the scenery in addition to explaining it to me. So I was always lacking that dice cohesion with everything that I like to get into character. So I started seeing videos in maybe the summer of 2019. YouTube was like, you should check out, you know, this. And I watch it and it's this person making dice. And I'm like, you can make your own dice? And I'm like, I could do that. You know, you fall into the rabbit hole and you start watching video after video after video. I could do this. And then I look, you know, you pan up to the rest of the room and you see all the half finished crafts that you've been getting into. And yeah. And so I was like, no, I better not. And then of course the algorithm's like, well, you watch 15 of these videos. So, you know, over the next few months, they're like, you should watch this one. So eventually, so my birthday and Christmas are, you know, in kind of the same-ish area. I'm a Scorpio, I'm a November birthday. So I kind of pooled my money from my birthday and Christmas to buy a pressure pot and some resin. And I thought, I'm just going to give it a go. It'll be fine. It's, you know, I'm just going to make stuff for me. And then it kind of just went from there.
Wow. You really jumped in at the deep end.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm getting everything I need to do it. And it was, oh my God. And like, we were finishing the basement. The basement was like studs when we bought this house. And so I'd been buying drywall and like everything for that. So I was really strapped for cash. And I'm like, I shouldn't be wasting money on this, but I can do it. It'll be fine. I can do this. It'll just be a little hobby on the side. I won't throw this away like all the other hobbies I've picked up.
You stuck with it now.
And look, I haven't. The first promise I've ever kept to myself.
And I'm sure none of your customers would want you to give it up at this point anyway.
I always joke that there'd be riots in the street if I ever like decided to stop. It's like, cause I get so many like messages and like requests for things. I'm not complaining. I love it. I like that people like my art enough that I couldn't quit even if I wanted to. It's good. The pressure feels good.
Now, mentioning your art, tell me about your style. What is the definitive, the reliable rogue dice look like?
Well, I don't know that there's a definitive style that I have. I know that everybody says I have a vibe, and that vibe is like gloomy. It's dark and gloomy. Which is, you know, terrible. That's okay. It's like art deco plus gloomy, which, you know, honestly, I can't say that's wrong. I can't say they're wrong, but I would say most of my designs come from a few different places, like my D&D games.
And looking at your Instagram, I'm looking at some of those ones like the gooey eclairs and
that actually came from my Thursday game with my 13-year-old rogue. She sold just a little bit of her soul, just a partial bit, for a plate of deliciousness. She's got a sweet tooth, so it like makes sweets on demand. And I thought, oh, this would be so funny to make these really like gooey, messy dessert dice. And it kind of exploded from there. So
they all look so tasty and so edible.
Yeah, no, don't eat the dice. I promise they don't taste as good as they look. Not that Not that I would know, but, you know,
and
they don't.
Something else I've noticed about your dice before as well is you use a lot of different shapes, and you've got a lot of different styles of dice as well, which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, I really have been enjoying like making the crystal dice, or like the faceted dice, the potion bottle dice are like my newest weird thing that I've been doing. And they are not fun to learn how to sand those tiny facets by hand. I know you had Doug on not too long ago, and I was like, I don't want to follow up Doug with his fat. No, I sand mine by hand, and they do not look as clean as his do, but I really enjoy doing it, and they make the dice shine so nicely.
Oh, and I'm so impressed. I'd love to have a go at doing those little, or something like those little potion bottles at some point.
We figured out, so I'm part of the Revel Broker Discord, and we all like share little tips and tricks to how we do things. And they had some weird dice that they put out, and we were all trying to figure out how the heck we were going to sand them. And my friend Tara over at Red Wine Dice had mentioned these like weird foam sandpaper. They're like foam backed, so you can hold on to them easier, and it makes polishing and like sanding all of those so much nicer.
Like micro mesh or something like
that.
Yeah,
they're like a 3M sandpaper, and they're like, yeah, they're fantastic. I don't know where I would be without them.
Right. And so you mentioned the Rebel Broker, and have you used many of their masters before or their designs?
Oh yeah. No, they sponsored me for a while back when I don't want to say I first started. I've been doing it for about a year, and they were the only people that were making my masters. I had found their shop on Etsy, and I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And so I bought them, and I was like, I really like these. I didn't have whatever this cure inhibition is called. I didn't have that. To a point, I'm almost embarrassed that I had to ask in their Discord at one point. Everybody was talking about it. I'm like, what is cure inhibition? Because I never, their masters are so good because I've just never had that issue. But they had reached out to me back when I was around, I was kind of stalling out at around 300 followers, and offered to sponsor me. So they kind of invited me into the fold. They sent me free masters and just kind of helped boost my business. So I've been working with them for years now, and they've been primarily my sole provider for masters up until recently. I kind of graduated out of their sponsorship program. I got my own printer, and I've been designing a lot of my own dice ever since, which I all learned from their Discord. So if you're trying to make master dice or learn to print your own, that's the place to go.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely awesome. For anyone listening who's wondering what all this cure inhibition is, basically it's the way that certain types of silicon react to the chemical components in 3D printer resin. And what happens is it actually prevents the silicon from curing altogether. Unfortunately, it's a really common occurrence in dice making for anyone who's tried printing their own masters. And Nichelle, I'm guessing now that you're doing your own, you've probably come across this a few times now.
Yes. I found a good workaround for it. I didn't do it with my newest ones. I thought, I haven't had any problems with cure inhibition, so I'm just going to mold these right after I printed them and like cleaned them. And that was a mistake. That was not a good choice. I made bad choices that day. So now I have to wait the week before I can try again.
I know that feeling so well. I've got to say, I tried so many different ways of getting through that while I was writing the book. And, you know, if you jump online or, you know, any of the groups or Reddit or anything like that, there's a lot of good information, but there's also a lot of superstition. You know, people are like, you know, if you turn around on one leg and put your right arm up in the air and only use this specific type of resin, then you won't get cure inhibition. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a chemical reaction, and it really depends on so many different factors. We're going to be discussing that one in length in a future episode. I'm hoping to have someone on who's an expert in you know, the chemical components in resin and silicon. So yeah, keep an eye out for that one, and make sure you subscribe on, you know, whatever platform you're listening to this on, so you know when that episode drops. Now, I know you said that some people think your dice are a bit gloomy. I completely disagree, obviously.
They're just a little dark, you know, the themes and stuff. Maybe not so much recently with my dessert dice, but yeah.
Now, I'm going to pick on one of the darker sets that you've done. I saw on Instagram a while back your Infernal Contract dice, and they were absolutely fantastic. They had these little these little scrolls in them and the fire. They were absolutely amazing.
You know, the funny thing about those dice, so that fire effect, that actually started as like a mistake. I bought the wrong thing. I mixed everything up and I was like, this is horrible. And then that everything that I bought for it went in that drawer of this was awful. I hated it. Never again. And then every now and then I'll come back to that drawer and I'll say, okay, I spent a lot of money on this stuff. It's time to, you know, do something with it. And that's actually how that fire effect was born. And then I was like, well, how can I do this? How can I add this in a way that's really interesting? And another big inspiration for me is like video games and characters and things. And normally I don't advertise like what my inspiration was, if I can help it, because I want people, when they look at something, I want them to feel what they feel about it. I don't want them to go into it having a specific theme in mind. I want them to say, oh, this reminds me of, you know, a murder mystery party, or, you know, the sweets from this thing. But those ones, the Infernal Contract, were actually modeled after Raphael from Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know if you've played or not.
Oh, I've played it.
I've got a lot of sets that I'll model after like characters from video games, or, you know, ideas or themes.
I think and I think Baldur's Gate's been a huge inspiration to a lot of dice makers.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're not the first person that said that to me, and I'm guaranteeing you won't be the last either.
Oh, probably not, no.
When you're not playing Baldur's Gate and when you're not, you know, finding inspiration there, you tend to plan out your sets, or do you just kind of go wild with them? Like,
I have mood boards that I do for like characters or like settings that I find in video games that I really like. Otherwise, the other form of inspiration for me is that drawer of stuff that I bought that just never ever worked out. I will just open that, sit down and say, okay, we're doing something with some of this stuff right here and right now. And that's where a lot of like some of my weirder sets, I don't know if you've seen the one that's like half gold leaf and half like striped. That was a bunch of stuff that I bought. And I'm like, well, I've never used this before. Let's do something with it. I've got these random blanks that I poured and I've got this weird stuff. Let's throw it all together and see what happens.
It's funny you mentioned that. I saw a post on Reddit the other day where someone was trying to use the browning effect. You know, sometimes you put alcohol inks into resin and they kind of burn. And so someone was trying to see how they can, you know, capture that and turn it into something useful.
That's part of like the fire effect too. Like that, I bought this ink and it just burned the heck out of my resin. And I'm like, oh, this is so ugly. Throw it in a drawer, forget about it. And then it's like, well, how can I make this work for me? You know, and you start trying things out and practicing with things and trying out different resins and different ways to introduce it until you get a result. And you're like, oh, hang on a second. This is actually the coolest thing I own. How was it sitting in that drawer for a year and a half? You know?
Yeah. And I think we probably all got that drawer. And you're right. Maybe the best thing that we've never used is lurking in there because, you know, one day it did something that we didn't want it to do. So do you find these days you spend more time experimenting, or do you tend to just do the things that, you know, kind of work out for you?
I jump back and forth. I try to keep in my shop, I try to keep stocked like the things I know people want. I'll get a lot of requests for like remakes, so I know kind of what's popular. So I try to keep at least, you know, some of those things flowing through my shop constantly. Otherwise, I kind of have free rein, and that's what's so beautiful about running your own business, that you can do whatever you want. I mean, you know, obviously you want it to sell, you want to keep product moving through, but I have that freedom. It's so nice because I'm lucky enough to have that freedom to be able to experiment and do weird things. And, you know, if they don't sell, they don't sell, and that sucks, but whatever. We don't really depend on my income to pay bills. So I'm in a position where I can take those risks.
Yeah, like, you know, I think that's so important. And you do this full time now, Nichelle?
I do, probably more than full time, right? Actually, but being honest, since I've gotten into like printing my own stuff, it's, yeah, This is my only job.
It's definitely a time sink, I must say, once you get into printing.
Yeah. And then there's like, oh, well, I printed this really weird shape. Guess I have to go print a mold housing for it now.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work, but like it's so much freedom to be able to just, I have an idea, go to the computer, plan it out, get it on the printer, you know, the same or next day, and then go print your own mold housings and like get it in the works without having that second or third party that you have to go through and then wait and wait. And I'm like, I hate to say it, I'm a control freak.
Right.
So okay, if things aren't quite right, I can go back and fix it and I don't have to feel bad, because I would feel terrible if I had to call up like Jay from Rebel Broker and he's like, listen, I designed this thing for you. And I say, it's not the right size. I don't like it. I think that this, I would feel so bad constantly going back and making him redo things. So it's nice to be able to do those myself.
It absolutely is. And look, another thing too is looking through your work, there's a lot of shellcast dice or, you know, blank or inserts or whatever people, you know, want to call it. Is that a big part of what you do? Is it something that you really enjoy doing?
Yes, I would say that's probably 99% of what I do now is the blanks and then the shell casts. I love the freedom that I get with blanks because you can decorate them however you want. You know, you can add themes and ideas and things that you just couldn't do in normal resin, in just like a one cast thing. So I adore using blanks. It's probably one of my absolute favorite things and probably what I do every time now.
But that takes a degree of patience as well, right? Because you have to double cast them.
Yes. Yeah. You cast the one and then you pull them out and it's like, if they pass and you're like, oh, this is pretty good. They just need some extra decoration and then I can do them. Or you pull them out and you go, oh, these aren't super great. I'm just going to throw them in this bin. And then that's when I do all my experimenting, is with these weird extra blanks that didn't pass the test, you know? But yeah, no, I don't mind the double casting. It's really become second nature to me. Like it's a rarity and shocking when I do dice that only take one cast. And it's like, whoa, this is so easy.
Yeah. And look, I think shell casting is generally quite forgiving, but the only problem there is if you mess up the outer shell, right?
Oh my God. You have no idea the amount of times I've openly wept opening up some of those molds and it's like, no, I didn't. Or like you pull them out just a little too early, because I usually use sprue molds. So they have to come out at just the right time where they're still kind of flexible and you can cut all the, you know, the bits off of them, as opposed to cap molds, because I always get voids and hate caps. I hate them. So you'll pull the dice out and you'll go, I pulled these out an hour too early and like all the resin has like sucked into itself and they've got these weird divots and bubbles. And it's like, I spent an hour decorating these blanks. I spent an hour. And now they're ruined.
So frustrating.
Yeah. No, it's rage inducing. It's...
Yeah, look, I think anyone who's used cap molds has probably had their fair share of voids. But, you know, I think I've just kind of made my peace with them now and have it down to a bit of a fine art.
Well, I found the funny thing is, and this is kind of why I've shifted to working with only blanks. When I use my blanks in my cap mold, I never get voids. I never, ever, ever get them. If I don't use blanks, if I just fill those cap molds up, there's always a void. And it's massive. And it's like, where did this air even come from? You know? So that's helped. I have been slowly transitioning to cap molds.
Really?
And I know every dice maker who I know that hears that is going to be shocked because I'm so openly against cap molds. I hate them so much. And now that's like all I'm working with.
Look, I don't think you're the only dice maker. When I was researching for the book, I did reach out to quite a lot of dice makers and say, should I include something on, you know, sprue molds or, you know, other types of molds? And the funny thing is, I reckon about 50% of people said, no, you know, no one cares about sprue molds anymore. And the rest said, no, sprue molds are great. And, you know, they still very much have a use in dice making.
Yeah, I will say with sprue molds, it was nice coming into the art of like designing and printing your own dice with all of the knowledge I have, because I've primarily worked with sprue molds. Like cap molds are new to me. So I've come into this with the knowledge of both. While you know, the cap molds is a little bit less knowledge. So when I make these weird shapes, I can look at some of them and I can say, oh, you know, I could do this as a sprue mold and it would be 10 times easier than trying to do it as a cap mold. Like some of them have like rounded tops and bottoms. And it's like, well, how do you cap that? You know, you have to do a sprue mold for it. And so I've had to learn how to adapt like new styles of making molds for some of these weird shapes. And yeah, and it's just nice coming in with all that knowledge and knowing exactly what to do and what would be good and bad.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? There's so much knowledge outside of dice making there on how to make correct molds and using vents and things like that. And I think the problem with dice making is people have just said, you know, this is the way we do it. And, you know, there's just so much knowledge that's probably lost there. And traditional mold makers are probably looking at us going, why?
Why?
Why do you do things that
why
way?
Why wouldn't you do
there's
it this
so
way?
There's so many easier ways.
Yeah.
And also too, like a lot of complex shapes, you know, could probably benefit from some vents and things like that, or sprues as we like to call them in dice making.
Yeah. So that would be one that when I do them, which I, you know, I did, and then I ruined them because they got cure inhibition. But when I do them next, which should be on like Thursday, I think, I have a plan to do like a hybrid sprue mold. So it's going to be a cap with a sprue on it so that I don't have to worry about voids. Because I swear, voids are like the bane of my existence. But like also the beautiful thing about designing them too is I can take into account when I'm putting them together, like how is this going to mold? My original D12 for that bottle set had like this really tapered long, and it was so beautiful when I printed it, this beautiful tapered long potion bottle. And I was like, this is so wonderful. And then I printed it and I went, how the hell am I going to mold this thing? Like, I can't do it on the bottom like the rest of them because it's so tiny. I'll ruin my mold every one, you know, pull that I get from it. So I had to go back in and redesign the D12 to be a bit fatter and shorter and have that bigger opening so that I didn't have to worry about that.
Now, you've said to me a few times you're not very technical, but here you are designing dice. What are you doing that in?
I equate that what I... absolutely compliment that to Revel Broker. They taught me everything I know. Their Discord, they had classes. I think they still do them, and they'll do like individual classes for
okay,
people.
Cool.
But I do them in Tinkercad. Okay. And Tinkercad, I've tried Blender. I can't, I am not technological by any stretch of the imagination. So Tinkercad is beautiful because it's just, you just have to understand shapes. And I actually went to art school, not that that necessarily means anything, but like I've kind of studied how shapes interact with each other and like how I have kind of a better grasp on how things will look together. But essentially Tinkercad is like playing with toy blocks, right? You can just take a circle and a triangle and mash them together, group it, do some cutting, and you have a potion bottle. You know, it's super, super easy. Blender is like that, but on steroids. Like I don't understand this at all. There's too many buttons. Why is everything hidden from me?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I've spent most of my career as a programmer, and I still find Blender really challenging. But so tell me, you went to art school, you've done embroidery. Have you always been involved in the arts in some way, shape or form?
I have. I've actually, throughout like my school career, I played the viola for the majority of my school and then a little bit outside of school. So I've always at least had that going. I didn't really have a chance to take like any art classes. I always wanted to, but like orchestra really took up a lot of my electives during that time. And then when I got out of high school and I thought, well, I'm going to go to college. I thought, I've always wanted to do art. Let's just jump in. And I got just a general fine arts degree. So I've tried everything. I did jewelry making. I did, you know, all the different kinds of painting. I did like a weird found art class, which was so strange because it was like, bring in a book and let's like make sculptures with it. And then we learned how to make paper. And so I've touched on a lot of different art things. And so to finally be outside of college and like doing my own thing and having my own business and having it be resin dice for like D&D is shocking to me. If you had told me this back when I was in my 20s, I probably would not have believed you. Like, I would have never expected this to be the avenue. But, you know, I'm making a thing and people seem to really enjoy the thing I'm making. And that brings me so much happiness.
I bet it does. And are you getting a lot of people wanting custom work or commissions done?
I do. Yeah, I actually normally I used to just kind of go with the flow. If anybody contacted me, I'd just make them what they wanted. But for some reason, over the last, I want to say maybe 4 months, I'm not sure where all these people came from. But yeah, I get a lot of requests to a point that I had to finally like sit down and actually hammer out, this is how many I can do. It was like 10 slots that we put up. And I was like, I overdid it. I got halfway through the month and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to have anything for my restock. Like So I had to sit down and say, okay, this is how it's going to work. So take 5 per month now for like 1 week, but they usually are gone, you know, within the first day or two.
And do you ever get any strange requests for commissions? You know, anything unusual or different that, you know, you'd like to talk about?
No, they're great. Normally I get 50-50. Most of the time I'll get remakes. So like, it's a feeding frenzy when I restock my shop, like to a point that even I'm shocked every month. So I'll get people saying, you know, I really liked this set and it sold out so fast. Can you remake it for me? Which I'm always happy to do because that's, you know, that's an easy commission. And then the other half is like character-based dice, which I love doing character-based dice, especially the ones where people are just like, do whatever you want with it. Like, here's my character, do what you want with it. And I love having that creative freedom. Of course, I want their input on it, you know, but I'll send them to like a Google Docs where it'll just ask all kinds of things about the character. You know, what do they do for fun? Like, what's their general mood? How would you describe them? Things like that. So I can get a feel for them. I would say there's nothing really strange that people ask for. I had the newest one I had was like, right in my wheelhouse, which was like for a vampire wizard character that was very like Victorian and like dark and red and like bloods. And I'm like, that's me. Like, I can do that. That's what I do. That's my vibe. Oh, wait, no, I don't have a vibe. Yeah. Oh, no, it's dark and gloomy. Yep, nope, you came to the right person.
And Nichelle, it sounds like you got a pretty well kitted out workshop there. What's one piece of equipment that you just couldn't live without?
Yes, I have a precision X-Acto knife. I tell this to everybody that will listen to me. I will preach this. This is the hill I die on. The precision X-Acto knife. It is to die for. The thing is so awesome because it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It like comes to a point. It's super short and it has like a ring at the end that you stick your finger through, right? So you're almost wearing jewelry, like super sharp, very dangerous jewelry. And then you can use your finger to glide where you're cutting. That helps me with all my sprues. Not that, like I said, many people use sprues, but you know, it'll help. It helps with like everything, not just dice making, but like everything. The Fiskars Precision X-Acto knife. Trust me, it will change your life. Oh, and wait, there's one more. The Dremel. I polish my stuff with a Dremel. Could not live without the Dremel.
Do you do that from the beginning, or like, do you start with, you know, your Zona paper, polishing paper?
I do not use Zonas. I am starchly against Zona. Like, the dislike I have for cap molds doesn't come close to the dislike I have for verging on maybe hate for Zona papers. I started with them. I used them for a very, very, very long time.
As people do.
Yes. And then I learned about this other method and I was like, well, that looks pretty cool, but I already have the Zonas. I already know how to use the Zonas. So I kept using those for like another 6 months before finally I'm like, no, something's got to give. So I tossed those. I got my 3M sandpaper and I started sanding them with that. And then I go right to the Dremel. I go 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 on specifically 3M, right to the Dremel with polishing compound. And oh my God, they polish up like glass. And it's right. Like a fraction of the work that Zona papers are.
And a fraction like, of the cost.
Yes. Yes. And I'm so mad at myself for spending those extra 6 months with the Zona papers that like everybody that will listen to me, I'm like, no, you got to get rid of them. I'm like a preacher on my soapbox, like screaming at people to ditch the Zonas.
It sounds like we might have to do a deep dive into that in a future episode. And Nichelle, around the socials, who are the people that we should be following? Who are the people that inspire the reliable rogue?
Revel Broker Productions, for sure. If you're wanting to get into printing your own masters or designing them, anything that has to do with printing, find their Patreon, subscribe to like the lowest tier. I don't know if they have a cap on it, but I think it's like $1. It'll get you into their Discord. They have a ton of information already gathered. But they'll answer any of your questions. It may take a day or two, you know, to get back to you, but it's so, so great and full of just a ton of helpful people from all different stages. So definitely check them out if that's something you're interested in. As for dice makers, I would say probably Red Wine Dice. Tara and I have been really good friends for the past couple years now, and we've shared a lot of like tips and tricks. So, you know, if people are listening to this because specifically it's about me, you know, she's got a lot of the same techniques that I use, but she does them in a different way. You know what I'm saying? So we'll kind of take each other's ideas and like put our own spin on them. So if there's something that you like of mine, definitely check out her page. And can I plug one more thing that's not dice, but is super cool and totally D&D related?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So I have this, another collab that I did was with Adventurer's Kiln. And she makes the coolest little dice boxes. She like takes these tins. They're almost like Altoid tins, but a little bit bigger. And she does this clay work, and she'll do scenes in clay on top of these boxes, and you can put your dice in them. And they are so cool. And it should be a crime that she's only at 150 followers. She made me the coolest. All I told her, we did a trade. All I told her for mine was, I want something for my treasure map dice. And I don't like bright and cute. I like dark and gloomy. You can see a theme here. I like kind of dark and gloomy. Can you do something with that? And she made me the coolest, like stormy shipwreck with a little like Loch Ness monster out in the water. And it had this mast, this like broken mast that I could set my dice on top of. And the thing is so stinking cool. One more weird one that I really like, the steeping dragon. If you like tea, she does like D&D flavored themed teas. I got one of her advent calendars last year because, you know, it's hard to order something if you don't really know what it tastes like and you can only go off of a description. So I got the advent calendar.
And what does Dungeons and Dragons taste like?
That's a very good question. I still don't know. I tried like every flavor that she had. And I actually, my two favorites were like some of her winter blends, which I think I then went and bought her out of because she only had them at the winter time. And I was like, I can't live without these for the rest of the year. So.
And I love that. And I think that there's nothing an adventure needs more than great tasting tea. And down under in Australia right now, I've got to say it's absolutely freezing. And there's probably nothing that would be better than a hot cup of tea. Nichelle, if people want to reach out to you and, you know, and see more of your dice and you know, maybe get on that exclusive commission list, what's the best place for people to do that?
Well, my Instagram, I only have the one social media. I technically have a Facebook, but let's be real, I don't update that very often. So Instagram is really good. I have a link to my email, a contact form on my website, which is just thereliablerogue.com. You can also find a link to that in my Instagram bio, as well as my commissions page, which will outline everything I do, I don't do, when my commissions are open. It outlines price guides, all of that on the commissions page on my website, also in my bio link.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure today. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, and I really hope our listeners have really enjoyed this. And yeah, please follow Nichelle, the Reliable Rogue, and buy her dice. They're absolutely fantastic. So. Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I've actually really, really enjoyed my time here. So this has been fun.
And if you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Talking Dice. And we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a big thumbs up and leave a review. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/talkingdice if you'd love to help us in the best way possible. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Talking Dice. Goodbye.